I'm Lisa Mullins, and this is The World. In the 1950s, while American teenagers listened to this, teenagers in China were listening to this. Until the 1970s, the U.S. and China were on different planets, musically speaking. That started to change, slowly at first, after the death in 1976 of Chinese Communist leader Mao Zedong. Today, China has a thriving rock scene. Canadian musician and author Jonathan Campbell moved to China about a decade ago. He immersed himself in the music scene there and soon became interested in the history of rock and roll in China. Campbell traces that history in his new book called Red Rock.
Music from the West basically started infiltrating China in the late 70s. You've got this slow, very slight opening where people are allowed to travel, and foreign students become a really important source of information for young Chinese that become interested in this music. And so you've got this small community of people that are really excited about what they're hearing and what they're getting their hands on. And so they, in turn, start to create their own version of it. And in 1986, you have Cui Jian, who is already a pop singer on the Chinese model, introduce the country to this song called Nothing to My Name, which then becomes Chinese rock and roll song number one.
You know, hearing his voice, clearly, you say this is Chinese rock and roll song number one. Will the Chinese skip the Elvis era, Jerry Lee, Dylan, Stones, Beatles, moving straight into kind of Springsteen era?
Yeah, exactly. And I think what's interesting about that song, especially listening back now, it's not what you would think of when you think of, a huge sort of important rock song because of the inputs that they had. And what you have is a guy like Cui Jian, he listened to Kenny Rogers and the Carpenters. And, you know, it was a while before he even heard Bruce Springsteen. But again, it was that folk and what we would now think of as easy listening. That's the first things I got through. He was a big Simon and Garfunkel fan.
You write in the book that cassette tapes had been passed around, copied, played until they literally gave out. So as the Chinese, especially young Chinese, are discovering artists like that one, Cui Jian, they also start putting together garage bands and these bands start playing music. I want to hear now a cover song by the band White Angel. This one came out in the late 80s, 1989. Now, that song came out, as we said, in 1989, same year as the government protests in Tiananmen Square. It sounds like the music matches the mood.
Well, a lot of the rock scene stirs were in the square.
You mean
for
during the protests?
During the protests. These guys were in Tiananmen Square. White Angel actually is a band that's comprised of a number of people that go on to pop and rock stardom. They got together, and what they did was they heard this hair rock of the late 80s in America. You have Bon Jovi right there, and you've got other bands of that ilk that are really speaking to people the most just because the photographs, the sounds defy language, and it just sort of speaks right to what their idea of rock and roll is. I mean, you said we skipped Elvis and we skipped Bill Haley, and we went right into this era of rock and roll. These guys then go back and listen to the Beatles and know the Beatles are important, but can't figure out why people are into them when you've got Bon Jovi instead.
So one of the other groups that emerged after Tiananmen Square was called the Tang Dynasty. And like a lot of bands, they became huge rock acts in China. Let's hear a little bit from them. At what point did Chinese rock kind of break off and have an identity of its own? Or was it always kind of mirroring, even decades later, what was happening in the U.S. and the U.K.?
Yeah, I think this is a major point that Chinese artists and people watching Chinese artists are concerned with, and that's the idea of what makes it Chinese. Because obviously the cover of the Bon Jovi song was just happened to be in the Chinese language, and that's about all the difference that there was. A band like Tang Dynasty, which formed in the late 80s and became huge they sort of added this flavor in it. You hear it and you know that it's Chinese. The chords they use, the sort of keys they use, and the way they come at their music comes out as a very Chinese sounding thing.
You yourself, Jonathan, were a part of the rock scene in China because you were a drummer and a promoter of the music there. What was kind of the zeitgeist as a rocker there that you felt that could contrast with the music of the rock and roll of North America? I mean, was it coming from that same place of protest, at least initially?
Well, I feel like the music that I was watching and eating up, because I first saw it and then participated in it, was very much sort of an expression of just wanting to do something different. I think when we use the word, when we use words like political to describe rock and roll, we're still on that sort of 60s model of rock and roll and, you know, fighting for change and fighting for all sorts of causes. Whereas I think the word political is sort of a difficult word for a Chinese rock musician to sort of grab onto and say, yes, that's what I am. Because it's kind of a dangerous concept in that country. It has been until very recently, and it still occasionally is dangerous to be political, literally political. So, but these guys are making a choice to do something other than that which their parents and their country expects of them, which is to grow up, find a job, find a wife, buy a house, buy a car. I mean, it's a very similar situation as we have here, where these guys are choosing an alternative lifestyle. And that alternative lifestyle in the 80s and 90s, when these guys were choosing to do it, it was just inconceivable that you would possibly leave, you know, the work unit, the life that's been laid out for you.
Jonathan Campbell, whose book is called Red Rock, The Long Strange March of Chinese Rock and Roll. We're going to close, Jonathan, with a song by the current band called Omnipotent Youth Society. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
You can watch a video of Chinese rocker Cui Jian performing with the Rolling Stones when they toured China. That and more info on Jonathan Campbell's book is at theworld.org. Our theme music was composed by Eric Goldberg. From the Nan and Bill Harris studios at WGBH, I'm Lisa Mullins. Hope you have a great weekend.